All right. I think I'm going to dive in. And if more people trickle in, we can, just direct them to the recording for the beginning. Really appreciate everybody showing up. If you have any questions, as always, feel free to drop them in the chat. You can chat me here. Or you can drop in a Q&A too, whatever's easier for you. I'm going to watch both. So without any more preamble, let me just share my screen and we're just going to dive into it. So I'm going to teach everybody how to run Facebook ads specifically for Simplero. All right. Can y'all chat in and let me know if you can see my screen okay? Any tech kerfuffles there? Good, good. I'm going to assume good unless somebody's screen. Perfect. Thank you, Madame. Awesome. So what we want to do, and let me back off just one note. So inside of Facebook's Business Manager, this is maybe one of the most important starting points, is you need to go to business.facebook.com and you have to start a Business Manager account. Now, you can run ads without a Business Manager, but if you don't have a Business Manager, you're not going to have all the features and functionality that I'm sharing with you today. And you're also going to see some limitations as far as what's allowed inside of your account. So you definitely need a Facebook Business Manager. If you don't have one, please go get one. It's not hard to set up. It takes a fraction of a second, especially if you already have a Facebook profile. They just connect it with your Facebook profile. So once you're inside your Facebook Business Manager, and I can show you what the overall navigation looks like, it's going to show you all the managers that you have access to. You'll notice that I have access to a handful of them. I'm going to choose my primary Business Manager account. And then it's going to show me various ads managers. And then I can go track down the one. Oops, let's go this way. Can track down the ad account that I actually want to live inside of and open it inside of Business Manager. If you only have one account, if you're not an agency and you don't have multiple clients, you're not going to see all the gobbledygook that I just showed you. You're going to log into Business Manager and it's going to show your Business Manager account. In which point you're going to be in really good shape and have no issues. So don't worry. You'll notice that you can see a lot of the campaigns that I've run in the past, which is kind of cool. Facebook is set up with in three basic categories. You have your campaigns, which is like, the parent. And this is where we're going to set budgets and primary settings, let's say. And then you have your ad sets. And the ad sets are the categories within the campaign. And I like to segment ad sets by target, the audience that I'm going after, but you can segment it by anything. What's kind of cool about this is you get to choose what's working for you. So ad sets might be segmented by, offer, if you're split testing pricing, or if you're split testing media. So the real key here though is you want to make sure that you're splitting up your campaigns so you can begin to see what's actually working and what's not. And I'll explain more what I mean about that in a little bit. And then within ad sets, you have all your ads. So every ad set should have at least five ads. And that's becoming less and less true because there's ways to split test media inside of ads. But you want to give Facebook the opportunity to test various ads against each other. It's a machine learning mechanism, and we want to take advantage of the machine. So make sure you have enough ads so that you're actually put in a position to where Facebook can figure out what's working for you. So the very first thing we're going to do, actually, before we begin building ads, is we're going to go set up our conversion tracking. So inside of the Facebook Business Manager, you're going to go over to this waffle menu, which is called, I just found out recently, it's called a waffle menu. And then we're going to select Events Manager. And in our Events Manager, you're going to see all of our pixels. And pixels are the tracking mechanisms that give you the opportunity to track people on your website. Now, you don't want to use the same pixel for every new website unless you have the same audience for every new website. So if you have multiple funnels or multiple membership sites or whatever, it might behoove you to create a new pixel. And if that's the case, then I'd encourage you to do so. You don't want them to be incestuous. But if you have the same exact audience across multiple sites, then you can use the same pixel, and it actually benefits you to do that. So I'll show you how to create a new pixel. Inside of the data sources area, we're going to go here on the left-hand side and say connect data sources. And then we're going to choose web. And we're letting it know that we want to track things that happen on a website. And we don't want the conversion API, we want pixels. So we're going to choose Facebook Pixel. And now it's going to ask us to name the pixel. So I'm going to say test for Simplero. You'll notice that I just did this because I've got a test for digital marketer up there. Now you can provide Facebook with your URL and Facebook will tell you if there's an easy integration partner. To my knowledge, and you know what, why don't we test this because I don't know this for a fact, but I don't believe that Simplero is an integration partner. We're gonna find out together. So if I click on continue, let's see if there's a partner integration. And there's not. And full disclosure, I don't use the partner integration, generally speaking, because I like the manual installation. I think it actually works better. So we're going to say install code manually, and then we're going to copy this code. Now, the right way to install any code is using something called Google Tag Manager. I'm not going to teach you Google Tag Manager on this call because it would take us, you know, it's kind of a departure. So you can go learn that on your own time if you have any interest. But we have the ability to install the base code inside of Simplero. And what I'm going to do, I've got a custom membership site that I've created just for this purpose. And so I'll go to the membership site and I'll show you where we can go to install that code. In the configuration menu, if we scroll all the way down, you'll notice that there's some tracking code. And I have Google Tag Manager installed here. So I could be using my Google Tag Manager, but to show you the quick and easy way to do it is we're going to install this in the head of our tracking code. And you'll notice that it actually references right here, just above the closing head tag. And so we're going to install our Facebook pixel code inside our header, basically. And then once I've saved this, then I come back here. And how do I get back to my homepage? Awesome. Now, when I go back to my homepage, I've added my Facebook pixel. And then there's this really cool Chrome extension called the Facebook Pixel Helper. And let me give you that link now that I'm thinking about it. Facebook Pixel Helper. Oops. So the Facebook Pixel Helper is something, if you don't have Chrome, you can find it for other browsers as well. But it's something that you can download. And what it's going to do is help you identify whether or not your site has the Facebook Pixel. And notice that there's two pixels firing. So this membership site is actually being delivered from my main business, which is Neato Marketing. So I'm getting Neato Marketing's pixel, and I'm getting the pixel that I just installed for testing purposes, which will only show up on this membership site. This is a really good use case for us because you can see how this could potentially be an error for somebody else if they accidentally installed two pixels and forgot about one or whatever. So it's going to show me that my pixel is now installed. It'll also show me the event info so I can see what events are firing. So if I fill out a form, it'll show me some of the conversion actions that I'm about to create. I'm going to teach you how to do that. So go install that Facebook Pixel Helper. It takes just a few seconds, and then it gives you the ability to see, you know, I've got a little green check mark. I know my pixel's installed. I can see my pixel ID there. And so I know that I have my right pixel installed. So now that I did that, I'm going to select continue. And then it's going to ask me if I want to turn on automatic advanced matching. Now, be really careful here, because basically what Facebook is going to do is take all the information that it's able to capture on your website and then port it into its own database. So if somebody were to fill out this form, for instance, it would actually be taking the name, the email information that they're providing, and then using that in order to begin building profiling factors on based off of my conversions. I recommend doing it because it improves the efficacy of your marketing, but you also want to make sure that you're being compliant with whatever terms of service you've already established. This is especially true for my European customers. So if you're worried about GDPR, I have to imagine that Facebook is GDPR compliant, but I don't know that for a fact. So I would just make sure you jump through whatever legal hoops you need to jump through to make sure that this is not going to get you into trouble. But if you're confident about that, then turning on automatic matching is actually really helpful, because what you're doing is you're giving Facebook the information about the people that are taking action on your site. So Facebook can go, oh, I'm going to go find more people just like this. And Facebook has some pretty good documentation on the security. It's all salted hash. They're securing the customer information. We hash the customer information on the website before they're sent to Facebook to help protect user privacy. So in theory, even Facebook wouldn't necessarily be able to retrieve this customer information, so they say. But it's just worth knowing, you know, anytime you're about to do something like this. Now that I have my automatic matching on, I'm going to open my event setup tool. Now, my disclaimer to you is this is probably going to throw an error the first couple of times you do it. So let's try it and see if it works for me. We're going to go find our website URL. And the other piece of this, by the way, is it's not going to fire if it's not receiving any events. So let me fill out the form. Come on, Sinclair. Oh, this happened last time too on our last training, if y'all remember. Maybe it's my email. There we go. So I've got my thank you page. And now, if I go back to my Pixel, let me actually refresh Facebook. I don't know if that'll help or not. You can just see how old I am by the fact that I felt like that was going to do something. There we go. So now that I have an event that went through Facebook and Facebook feels like, okay, we actually know what you're doing here. I'm going to plug my URL and then say open website. And this is really amazing what they've done. So it opens my website and then it has this little overlay and it's telling me to define the events on the page that I want to track. And you have two options. The first one is I can track buttons. So if I wanted to, I could come in here and say, anybody who clicks this button has filled out my contact form. They're a lead. Now, I actually don't want to do that. And I don't want to do that because an extraneous button click can happen. Look at what actually just happened. I tried to click that button, the form didn't load, and Facebook would have counted that as a lead, even though I never got that contact information. So the button click is the lesser of the two, but it's available to you. And sometimes it's the only thing you can track. So, you know, one really good example is if you have a phone number on your site and you want to track the phone numbers specifically from a mobile device when somebody's clicking on it, then you can use this feature for that. What I prefer to do is I like to track URLs. And what's cool about this is there's no cheating the URL. And so what we're going to do is let's say that I want to track the number of people that fill out this form. Well, I wouldn't track this URL because this doesn't show that they filled out the form. This just shows that they saw the form. Instead, I'm going to go to the URL that acts as a thank you page. And I'm going to tell, hey, Facebook, I actually have to be on the page. So I'll fill this out. Let's hope it doesn't throw an error. No. I don't know why it does that, y'all. Now that I'm on the page, I say track URL, it gives me the URL, and then I'm going to say this was a lead. And so basically what I've done is I told Facebook, if anybody comes from paid traffic and they land on this URL, then please count them as a lead, which this is a far more safe and secure way of aggregating data than just, you know, anything Java related. And so, you know, if you're using Google Tag Manager or something else, I still like using URL rules for conversion tracking. If you were on our Google Ads training, you probably saw something really similar. By the way, for my newbies, if you have any questions, drop them in the chat. Happy to make this interactive. Thanks for joining. So once we've chosen the URL that we're tracking, the next thing you need to do is choose the lead type here. And I'll caution you against being cavalier with your selection. Facebook is using machine learning to figure out what users do and what is it that we want them to do. So Facebook knows who its clicky people are. It knows who subscribes or who buys or who watches videos or who buys training or whatever. So if it knows who donates, if you tell Facebook very specifically the thing that you're tracking, it's going to get better at delivering that thing. So I could choose contact if I wanted here, but contact for me is maybe a little less aggressive than lead. And you'll also notice that these four are prioritized because these are our commercial intent conversion. So I'm going to say this was a lead. And then Facebook's going to say, well, is there a value associated with this? And this is really helpful. You know, if somebody just bought a course from you, and we know the course was, you know, whatever the course is, then you can choose the value on the page. If you're just doing general lead generation, then I'm going to say don't include value. And we're going to say confirm. And now I have this conversion action set up in Facebook. What's really cool is when I go build my Facebook ad campaigns, you have to tell Facebook what it is you want them to do. And the biggest, most catastrophic error that everybody makes is building their campaigns first, launching them, and forgetting to set up conversion actions. And by the way, when I say everybody, I mean like half of campaigns that I audit don't have conversion tracking at all. And of the half that do, most of them are set up incorrectly. This is the critical first step. If you do nothing else right, but you get your conversion tracking set up right, what's interesting is you actually have way more room for failure because the machine learning is going to save you in many other places. As long as the bot knows what it is that you want to have accomplished, then it's usually pretty good at driving at that goal. So make sure you set up your conversion tracking. I just did it for this one form. You want to do it for everything. Every product you have, every conversion point, every lead magnet, every download, every subscription option, anything that somebody can do to convert, set up conversion tracking. If you can't figure out how to set it up, just Google it. If you have a unique, you know, multi-touch, multivariate conversion setup, then there's other ways to do it. I'm doing kind of ultra linear now just for the sake of this training. So once I'm done with the setup, I'm going to say finished, and I'm going to give Facebook a smiley face because I don't want them to penalize me for anything. And I feel like they would actually do that. And so now I'm going to go back to my Facebook pixel. And what's a couple of things is you can see now that we've got more information available and accessible to us if we wanted to draw on it. And it'll show you a history of everything that your pixel has done. And then you have the ability to update some of your pixel settings here, which also means sharing it with other people, which can actually be helpful if you're doing like cross promotion or, you know, somebody's helping you manage your ad account, that type of thing. Now that we have our pixel set up, we're going to, actually, let's do one other thing just while we're here. I'd like to show you how to create custom conversions. So I showed you how to create a linear conversion, which is somebody filled out a form. But there's other types of conversions that you might want to create that are more in depth. So let's say you want to see somebody who you know, opted in for an offer and then also purchased the upsell. So there's two steps in that conversion process. What you would do is you'd select create custom conversion. And then we're going to name our conversion, give it a description if you're working with multiple people so you know what you're doing. Facebook's going to ask you to choose the data source, which is the pixel we just created. And then we're going to choose our conversion event, which at the moment is just URL from traffic because that's the only thing piping into this data source. And now we're going to create our rules. So you'd come in here and say, I want everybody that has gone to this website and has also gone to, you know, this other URL. And I don't have enough URLs on here to give you a proper example. But what I might do here is I might have this be the thank you page for my initial opt-in, and this is the thank you page for my course purchase. And I could even say, you know, my course is worth $150 or $500 or $1,500 or whatever. And then when I do that and create this custom conversion event, it now has the ability to conversion optimize against this event as well. Now, if you're not getting enough traffic to that event, you're not going to see any activity, obviously. But people who have complied with these rules, Facebook's going to start optimizing against. And if you can offer values, what's really cool about that is Facebook starts to know, okay, I know how much I can spend to go get this traffic. It's also really dangerous because if you give Facebook values where there are none, you'll see Facebook begin overspending. So an amateur move here is to guess at your values or provide values for events that don't exist, because you're basically, you know, giving Facebook carte blanche to spend into what they might consider to be your ability to buy that particular customer. Trying to think about if there's anything else I want to go over. Deleting that event. The other thing I'd like to show you is before we build ads is let's go to our audience manager. So in our little waffle menu, you'll click on audiences. And then in audiences, we're going to select, we're going to select create audience. And there's a couple of things that you can do here. You can create a custom audience by uploading a list of your current customers, which you have a great big list of customers. Definitely do that because you get to now target them on Facebook. And Facebook, what's really cool is it actually matches people really well. So if you've got a list of folks, then you can upload them in here and you can begin targeting them. You'll notice that I've got a ton of audiences that are of smaller sizes. That's okay to have a small sized audience. I actually like it better. And I like it better because it means that we're getting really specific with our targeting. Sometimes we're not gonna get much traffic out of it, but it can be really helpful to, you know, be really specific because if you have a small audience, you know exactly how to talk to them. What I'd like to show you though is how to create a lookalike audience. So inside the lookalike audience, what we can do is we can say, hey, Facebook, these are all the people that bought from me. I want to go get more people that look just like that. And Facebook's tracking 55,000 demographic and psychographic profiling factors. So it's able to take all these folks and, you know, figure out who else looks like them, more or less. Google incidentally is tracking 70 million profiling factors. So they're quite a bit away ahead of Facebook. So we need to go find our source, which is our Facebook pixel. Now, realize that you can use multiple sources, but I'm just going to use the pixel for now. And this basically means that we're going off of people that are, you know, just landing on our website, which for this particular instance is fine. But you can get a little bit more granular if you want to get more granular. So the other thing that you can do is we can choose the event that we want people to have taken in order to match the lookalike. And so if I wanted to choose lead, why can't I choose lead? Oh, it doesn't contain a customer value. So you can only choose an event that contains a value. So we'll just say purchased, which is Facebook's recommended. And that's interesting here because we're not going to necessarily have purchases, so this will end up not being worthy, but I'll walk through it anyway so you can see the way this works. You can, if you wanted to, you could narrow down your audience by location and say, you know what, I only want to go to look like audience for people that are here, so I'll say the United States since that's where I am. And then you select your audience size. Your 0 to 1%, this is the closest match. These are people, there's 0 to 1% variance. So they're as similar to your audience as they could possibly be. This is where you want to spend most of your money. If you'd like, one thing that I like to do is I like to test broader variance. And so what I've done here is I've got my ultra close variance, my broad variance, and then my very broad variance. And I don't go beyond 5% because I've never seen it work for myself personally. If you want to, you can, but I think that you stay here. And I think that your budget is spent something like, you know, 80% of your budget goes here, 15% of your budget goes here, and 5% of your budget goes there, assuming you're testing these lookalike audiences against each other. This is a really good strategy if you run out of traffic, if you've bought all the people that you can buy and you need a good expansion opportunity. A lookalike audience is a great place to go. Any questions about setting up conversions, custom conversions, or lookalike audiences before I dive into actually building out ads? Questions, any comments? Happy to promote people to panelists too if they want to talk. That way I don't feel like I'm just yelling at a webcam. Diving into Ads Manager now, we're going to build our ads. So you've installed your pixel and you've created conversion events. If you don't do those, by the way, then you're going to fail miserably. Forgive me for being so bullish in that statement, but I just want to make sure that's very, very clear. Now that we're ready to create our ads, over here on the top left-hand side, we've got on campaigns, select create. And then it's going to ask you the type of bidding. Do you want auction or reach and frequency? I don't like reach and frequency. I feel like this is like if Coca-Cola wants to spend $1 million this month just carpet bombing everybody they can possibly get in front of, then they're going to play the reach and frequency game. I like auction because it's a little bit more competitive and it gives you the opportunity to find pockets of performance. So this is performance-based traffic. Reach and frequency works really well if you know I'm going after a very specific group of people. I know exactly how to target that group of people, and I want to be in front of them as often as possible. So I own a small agency for Montessori school owners. And if I knew exactly how to target those Montessori school owners, I might go for reach and frequency and just say, hey, Google, I want to be, or excuse me, hey, Facebook, I want to be in front of these people as often as possible. Instead, for our purposes, more often than not, you're going to go for auction. Now, here's where things get really interesting. Facebook breaks up the campaign objective categorically. We have awareness, consideration, conversion. Brand awareness and reach are, you know, if you're warming people up, if you want them to get to know you, don't undervalue this. As small business owners, sometimes we look at this and say, well, I don't want brand awareness. I want people to buy. But remember, sometimes they're not going to buy until they know who you are. So it can make a lot of sense to run a brand awareness campaign first. Just give, just love on them. Just, you know, hey, here's a ton of value. Here's a great video. Here's, you know, something that I can share with you. And now that they've seen your face and they've heard your voice, and they've got to know you and they like you, then run a conversion campaign to that audience. Which you now know how to do because you know how to go set up custom audiences. So, you know, that's kind of a 1-2 punch, so to speak. What you'll see a lot of people do is in the beginning, they go straight for conversions because that's what we want. And a conversion just means that somebody's doing the thing that you want them to do. So they're filling out the form or downloading the thing or whatever. It makes sense that that's what you'd want to do, but it's actually in error. What you want to do in the very beginning, and this is kind of a pro tip, and it flies in the face of what a lot of experts teach, so forgive me. But you want to run a traffic campaign first. And my favorite analogy that I haven't done a very good job at brushing up, so I'll get better at it. But my favorite analogy is imagine that you have a robot and you send the robot to the grocery store with $10,000 and tell the robot, buy me all the bananas you can buy. And the robot comes back with 10 bananas. Well, you just paid $1,000 a banana. What you'd rather, and that's the conversions, by the way. You're basically telling, hey, Facebook, here's my money. Go get me as many conversions as you can get. What we want to do is we want to take the robot and say, hey, go to the grocery store, buy me all the bananas they have, and then tell me how much that costs. And so the robot goes to the grocery store, comes back with the 10 bananas and says, it's 30 cents a banana. And now you're like, okay, now I know that bananas cost roughly 30 cents. Now, Mr. Robot, please go to all the grocery stores in the country and try to find me all the bananas at roughly that price. And so what that is we run the traffic campaign to figure out how much bananas cost. So in this instance, what your organic ecosystem actually looks like from a competitive standpoint, how well people engage, when they convert, et cetera. And then once we have a good feeling as to the conversion rates, and that number, by the way, is 50 leads. Once you have 50 conversions, that's 50, 50 conversions, toggle over here to the conversion action. Now, 50 conversions is not a small amount of conversions, especially depending on how much your conversion actions cost you. So if you're paying $5 per conversion, you have a $250 total budget. That's not a bad shake. But if you're paying $50 per conversion, it might be tough for you to get to 50 conversions. So 50 is the rule, but you can break it. If you're at 20 and you feel comfortable, or, you know, and they're solid quality leads, then you might toggle over from traffic to conversions. But if you're asking me for, you know, the academic number, it's 50. So we're going to start with our traffic campaign first. And then when you're ready, you would pause the traffic campaign, move to the conversion campaign using the same conversion action. And all that does is tell Facebook, hey, I know how to go get conversions for this conversion action at X. So when they run the conversion campaign, they're going to try to replicate X. And if there are any questions about that, please feel free to drop that into chat. You can name your campaign ad set and ad if you want to, but we're going to do that incrementally here. So I just created a campaign, and you'll notice that there's a new campaign inside of my account. One note for you is Facebook turns the campaign on. So we're going to just come over here and turn it off. Do that quickly, because you'll forget. And then Facebook is going to spend money. This happens to me more often than I care to mention, where I'm building a campaign and I'm having lots of fun and things are enabled and I don't even realize it. And then I turn around and I've spent $100 in 2 minutes and I'm mad. So make sure that we toggle our campaign off for now. And Facebook makes it really easy to toggle campaigns on and off. The other note I'll offer you is sometimes you'll notice that the ad set is on. That's okay. The campaign's off. As long as the campaign is off, nothing else will run. However, every now and again, you'll jump in here and think, oh, I just turned my campaign off. Good news. You didn't. If your campaign is still running, all of the ad sets are still running. You just turned this one ad off. So I like to manage the ons off at the highest applicable hierarchical level. So if you're trying to pause a campaign, pause the campaign. If you're trying to pause an ad set, then you can pause the ad set. And I'll show you how to build these now. So we've got our new campaign, and I'm going to name this, we'll do Facebook ad coaching. So I'm teaching people how to run Facebook ads. We're going to get real meta. Now, if you have a business that deals with any of these special categories, you have to tell Facebook ahead of time. If you don't, you're going to get put in Facebook jail, and it's really hard to get out of. So make sure that you're really clear about the categories that you live inside of. Facebook gives us the option to change our auction type. We're not going to do that. Some of the more options are going to be more applicable when these are selected. But over here, we have the ability to add a spending limit to our campaign. This is really helpful if you want to control your budget and you're afraid of overspending. So you can just come in here and say, I don't want to spend any more than $5,000, or I don't want to spend any more than $500. Be careful with this, though, because if you have a campaign that's running and it's working well and you have a campaign limit that you forgot you set, it could kill a campaign. It could be a couple of days before you figure out that you've done it. So I don't like campaign spending limits. I just like to watch my budgets. Facebook does this really cool thing where it allows you to create an A/B test directly from the campaign level. We're not going to do that here, but just know that it's available to you. Basically, that would create the campaign that we're creating now as a control group. And then once we publish, allow us to create a variable that is tested against this particular campaign. It also gives us the ability to do what's called campaign budget optimization. We don't want to use, I'm about to tell you the wrong thing. This is acceptable. So what you can do over here is you can tell Facebook what your either daily budget is. So, I don't want to spend more than $50 a day, or what your lifetime budget is. I put $500 in there. And then you can say, I don't want to spend more than $2,500. I like lifetime budgets if I'm marketing an event or something that I know that, you know, is ending. And then I can back the lifetime budget into whatever it is that I want to spend that event. And then we have our ad scheduling feature here that if you want it. So I'm going to just say $50 daily budget. And now that I have my campaign set up, you'll notice that that was actually relatively easy. I'm going to select next, and it has now dropped me into the second tab. And you have to be really clear on where you are inside of Facebook's navigation. So the first tab is campaigns. The second tab is ad sets. It's easy to get lost. So now that we're in our ad sets, I'm teaching Facebook ads, but I want to have multiple ad sets. And let's say that I'm teaching Facebook ads to, you know, realtors, chiropractors, and lawyers. So this ad set is going to be Facebook ads for realtors. And now I have a couple of options here. Where I want to drive my traffic, you can market an app if you have one, drive them straight to Messenger or WhatsApp, which is actually pretty cool. I'm going to say that I want them to go to my website because we're marketing our Simplero sites. And then two things just for you to note. These are really worth paying with, especially Dynamic Creative. I'm not going to teach you how to use it here because it'll take way too long. But with Dynamic Creative, you can provide Facebook with a whole library of assets that it then uses. It actually builds your ads in real time based off of who it is that's seeing the ad. So it might know like, oh, I happen to know that Dana likes puppies and the color blue. And you have an image of a puppy and the color blue, and so it's going to build that ad. It might not be quite that level of granularity, but it's just like Google's responsive ads. Facebook is customizing the ads based off of what they think prospects are going to engage with the most, and based off of what real estate is currently accessible and available. We'll see this later, but Facebook allows you to decide where your ads are shown, and some places you need different types of assets. So if you show up in Facebook's right-hand column, that's a lot different than showing up in the news feed. And if you're in the right-hand column, I might want something that's smaller, image-based, stronger title, news feed. Maybe I want something that's media-based, videos, that type of thing. So Dynamic Creative gives you, I think, a better opportunity to show well based off of the inventory that you're allowing Facebook. The offer section is driven from offers that you create inside your Facebook page. Excuse me. It's a pretty cool feature, but it's kind of hit or miss. So be careful with this one, because sometimes Facebook is going to prioritize the offer over, whatever conversion action we're choosing. Now we're going to set our budget and schedule. Notice that you set your campaign budget in your campaign setting. And now we're in the ad set and setting the budget for this particular ad set. So you can control your spending on an ad set level, which is worth doing. But you can also have optimized budgets that gets distributed across, various ad sets, both available to you. So I can come in here and I can say, I don't want to start until Thursday because my landing page isn't going to be ready. And this is the day that it's going to end. And my ad spend limit for this campaign is $50 a day and $500 maximum or whatever. And I'm not going to do that because it's not really applicable here, but just know that that's available. Now we're going to get into, I think, maybe the most important part of all of Facebook. So if you've been asleep up until now, please wake up. Cause if and this is where the rubber really meets the road, and this is in the targeting. This is who is going to see my ads. So I'm doing Facebook ads for realtors. So I want to go after realtors. A quick note, those custom audiences that we made, this is where I would go to target them. So if I wanted, let's say that I made my lookalike audience, I would choose that audience here. Now, I want to be real careful because if I've created a custom audience, Facebook allows me to further narrow that audience. But realize that any narrowing you do is narrowing an already narrowed audience. So if I say, I don't want anybody 18, I'm going to go all the way up to 40. I've just took that custom audience and I chopped off anybody who's under 40. So this is where we can go to find our custom audiences and our lookalike audiences. And you have that audience selection available to you. We're not going to do that for this particular implementation. Instead, we're going to go look for cold traffic, let's say. So quick note, Facebook gives you different location targeting. People living in or recently in this location. I don't like this targeting, especially not if I'm going after realtors. I don't want somebody that was just visiting Scottsdale, which is where I live. I want somebody who lives here because I want somebody who, obviously works here. And there's a couple of other ones, people recently in or people traveling in. I think the first two tend to be the most viable. And I like this second one the best. I think it's the safest. You can narrow down your targeting if you want to. You can actually drop a pin, which is really cool. And, give Facebook a radius. Oops. So if I wanted to drop a pin here, which is, I missed my house. And then I can come over here and say, let's do a broader radius. And you can just kind of see how that works. That's what I wanted. Did they take it away? They did. They used to have, they used to have these really cool drop-down options. Oh no, there they are. Casa, you bozo. Sorry, y'all. So then you have these drop-down options that allow you to just choose. So you can say, hey, I want all of Canada and all the United States, which depending on how broad you're getting with your targeting, that might be a little bit easier for you. Be really careful with the age segmentation because I don't trust Facebook's data when it comes to all demographic info. People lie. They don't update information. Maybe it was the grandkid that set it up for them or whatever. So I'm not telling you not to use it. Just be careful about using it wholesale. I like to maybe start a little broad. And then if you decide, you know what, I do a coaching program for women in who've gone through menopause and I'm getting people that are too young, then you can start to narrow down your age. But I wouldn't narrow down unless you have a very specific use case like that, or you're just seeing folks that you might say the other thing too. You might say, hey, I'm trying to help, you know, young people get back into college. And I don't necessarily want the late starters. Hopefully that's not an offensive term. So I'm going to narrow down my age, but be careful about doing this wholesale. I like to optimize my campaigns with things like this. When I'm seeing, you know, and Facebook's going to show you, you can go through your campaigns and see from a segmented perspective how various audiences have performed. And then I can say like, gosh, and this actually happened this recently. We were running a campaign for a client and found out that women were converting at twice the rate for half the cost as men. So we just went out and we shut off dudes wholesale. And it actually performed really well. So you can update age, gender, et cetera. Now we're going to get into our detailed targeting. This is the most fun part. This is where I'm not going to spend as much time as I should on this because we don't have 100 years, which is how long we could spend learning this. You have to spend some time playing inside of here. So if you don't have Facebook open now, open it up and play, because what you're going to see is everything that Facebook allows you to target by. There's demographic data. And as you open each of these decision trees, you'll see just how deep this goes. So I can target by people that have an associate's degree, for instance. And what's really cool about this is you get to start to think about what indicators exist for your perfect prospect. You can't always target people according to the terms that you want to target them. So, you know, for instance, you might not necessarily be able to target, let's say that you're a marriage counselor and you want to target people who have, who need your help. Facebook isn't going to say, hey, these are the people that are having marriage problems. But what you might say is, you know what, a lot of my couples are dual income households where one person travels frequently. And then, so now I can come in here and I can say, well, I only want to target people that are married. So, you know, I'll jump in and say complicated is great. And that might be a separate ad group, by the way. Is there separated? I'm not trying to celebrate people's marital disputes, by the way. I'm just giving you an example of targeting. And then you could come in here and say, you know, in a relationship or married. And then, you know, maybe you layer on travel or you layer on financial difficulties in whatever way you choose to identify that. You know, we can come over here and say, give me they don't have it anymore, darn it. But we used to be able to segment by more levels of granularity. A lot of this went away by when the Cambridge Analytical scandal popped, incidentally. But my only point being, there's so many clues. And if you're willing to be creative and thoughtful, you can target people based off of, you know, who's the best potential prospect for you. And spend some time looking at what it is that Facebook allows you to target by. You can actually target by the name of an employer. So if I wanted to target everybody that worked at Twitter, let's see if it's going to do it for me. Yep, there's 989,000 people who have Twitter as their employer. I mean, really, some of this is actually really creepy. The industry that they work in, job titles, which is kind of cool. Interest is maybe one of the best ones. I really like interest-based segmentation because this is where you get into the minds of who it is that you're targeting. And I've always said that you don't deserve to market to somebody unless you can fall in love with them. And I really mean that. You have to care about somebody deeply in order to really understand what it is that's best for them and how to serve them. And if you can get your head around what it is they might be interested in, that's a good way to back into their targeting. So one good example that I use often is people who buy raw land also buy numismatic coins. And those two things have nothing to do with each other. So people who buy raw land will also buy gold and silver, stereotypically speaking. And it's kind of rooted in this like libertarian prepper psychology. But if I can't find people who, you know, if I want to target people who I, you know, are interested in buying my raw land and I can't find them, what I might be able to do is I can come in here in my interests and I can do like, you know, Buffalo Head Nickel or whatever. I don't know any famous numismatic coins, but you know, the type of, maybe there's a TV show on coin collecting or, you know what I'm getting at? Like you can kind of figure out what their interests are. You can also target according to people. So, you know, if I wanted to target people who listen to Tony Robbins, that's a very specific group of prospects. Well, I guess not too specific. He has 20 million people here. And you could narrow down from there. One of the best pieces of advice I got was from a gal named Molly Pittman, who used to run Digital Marketers traffic training. And she said that if you want to target avid golfers, don't come in here and target Tiger Woods as an interest, because everybody knows Tiger Woods, even people who don't like golf. Go target the golfer that only golfers know. And that's the way to segment by interest. So we've got demographic information, which is pretty self-explanatory. Interest-based segmentation, which is, this is the deepest well, and again, is really worth spending some time on. And then you have behaviors, and this is interesting and also really kind of creepy. So like one of my favorite ones to use is purchase behavior, because you can go after engaged shoppers, and all this means is these are people that have bought. These are people who have clicked on the call to action button shop now in the past week. It's huge. These are clicky people. They have their credit card in their hand. They actually might want to do something. Alfar is asking, last time you were teaching to hardly not choose the audience by interest, behavior, et cetera, and now you're into it. What are the different use cases for going specific and when not? Was it that one was Google and one is Facebook? Yes. So if you're talking about last time with the Google segmentation, Google segmentation and Facebook segmentation are very, very different. With Google, we're aiming at search terms. So for our last course, I was teaching you how to bid on people's keywords that they're entering. And if somebody's entering a keyword in Google, they're intrinsically qualified. So if I go to Google and say, I need a chiropractor near me, you don't have to care, you know, who I am, what I look like, what my interests are, because I just search for that thing. Now, if you're going outbound on Google, a lot of the strategy that I'm explaining here actually applies. But any inbound traffic, you want to take some of the guardrails off. You just want to trust that they know what it is that they're asking for. Because this is outbound traffic, this is interrupted marketing. You're paying to push your ad in front of somebody. And in so doing, you're taking a risk, and you want to make sure that you mitigate that risk as much as possible by building a box around who this person could potentially be. Was that an effective answer? Was that helpful? Give me a thumbs up or let me know if there's more that I need to dig into. And I appreciate that question, by the way. Thank you so much for that. And if anybody else has any questions, keep lobbing them up. I think it really contributes to the overall coaching. So you've got demographics, interest, behaviors. Behaviors is super cool. Alfred's giving me a thumbs up. Thank you so much. Sorry, I'm butchering your name. The other thing that you can do is you can say, you can have ands. So we did this for the client I'm running ads for right now inside of Facebook. We wanted to go after female Christian entrepreneurs. So that's pretty easy, right? I come in here in genders and I say female. And then for Christian, we found five or six charismatic thought leaders that were thematically aligned with the person that we were promoting. And then we added them as interests. And I wish I could remember their names. Balaton. That's what's kind of cool about Facebook, is you can actually just start typing and it will start giving you people. So like, there's Chris Jenner. That's definitely not who I, there we go. So Chris Balaton and KB Ministries. And you'll notice that there's two interests here. One is very small. It only has 19 people. One is 310,000 people. So I can say, give me Chris. Now, I wouldn't want to just target Chris standalone. This would be women. The other thing, and let me kill these two because I don't necessarily want those. So I don't want to just target Chris standalone, because that's only 190,000 people, which might not necessarily be a large enough sample size. So I could come in here and I could add other thought leaders. So let's say that I had Chris Balaton and Miles Monroe. Let's see if he's on here. Nope, not finding them. Oh, well, you could add a bunch of other thought leaders. And then the next thing that I could do is I could say narrow audience. So they have to follow some of my Christian thought leaders. And they also, and then I could come in here and say Dave Ramsey, you know, if I want people that are, you know, interested in financial savviness, or I could jump in and say small business owners. So here's people who are interested in small business, or, and this is where you wouldn't know this unless you'd played around enough inside of Facebook, but I could say business page. So Facebook allows you to target by business page admins. So I can say, only give me people that follow these Christian thought leaders who are also business page admins, because if they're business page admins, that lets me know that they have a business. If I was trying to target realtors, which is what I'm supposed to be training you on, then I would, you know, jump into job description would be something real estate accessible. And then I might segment by, you know, income if I have an expensive training or whatever. And then one last step, and by the way, you can narrow even further. So you can have three layers of and this, and this, and this. And remember, these are ands. So it's not Chris or, it's Chris and. If you wanted a, an or, then you just keep adding it here. And then I can exclude, and I can say, and you know what? Don't show me anybody who knows. I'm just going to use Tony Robbins because he's top of mind. And I don't know why you would necessarily exclude Tony Robbins, but you'd be able to exclude people for, you know, further narrowing. We call this audience sculpting. So, you know, if you want to get out in front of people, but let's say that you're a financial planner and you actually want to teach people. As a matter of fact, let's say that you're a Dave Ramsey certified consultant and you want to teach people Dave Ramsey stuff, but you actually don't want to get in front of people who know Dave Ramsey already, because now it's not a unique message. So you can say, and exclude anybody who knows Dave Ramsey, which would be, you know, kind of cool. So you can start to see, and now I've got 3,100 people, which, by the way, large audiences are better for traffic campaigns because there's more to go off of. But I like small audiences when you get down to it. A lot of marketers don't. I do, because it really lets you know what's working. You know, you have a hyper segmented audience here. If you've done your interests well, what's cool about this is if they're not buying what you're selling, so many people look at that and go, oh, the ad campaigns aren't working. And that's not true. Your product's not working. Here's the person that you said, I know for a fact, this is who my product is built for. I'm going after female entrepreneurs who are having money problems. Cool. Hey, female entrepreneur, I have this course on people who have money problems. And then if she doesn't buy that, you now know that you're positioning this wrong, articulating it wrong, charging too much or not enough. You have a stronger indication. So I like segmented audiences for that reason. It really helps you test offers and messaging, which is really kind of cool. So now that we have our segmentation down, and again, this is critical that you spend some time here. How do you test pricing with ads? Laurel is asking. That's a really good question. So there's a couple of options here. One is you can actually have the same product with three different prices and you run three different ad sets to that product. I don't like that, because people could end up seeing the fact that you have three different prices and be semi-repelled by it. What I like to do instead is I like to have the price set at whatever it's set at, and then I'll run the campaign and then change the price based off of time periods, maybe even with some pauses in between. Now, the reason that's a bad idea is because it doesn't take into consideration, you know, any seasonality or cyclical markets. So there's trade-offs to both. And it really depends on your business and what it is that you're looking to test. So you can do either. You could have, you know, three products, three different ad sets, run ads to all three and see which one converts the best, or you can have the same product and change the price three times. And if you're going to do that, make sure you're going from lower price to larger price, not the other way. Because if somebody who bought the high price sees your ad, you know, 2 months later at the lower price or 2 weeks later or whatever, that's a reputation management issue waiting to happen. So yeah, I'd start high start low and then move higher. And then anybody who bought at the lower price now just feels better about it. The other thing to do, just from, you know, making sure you're maintaining proper reputation management, is anybody who did end up buying at the higher price, once you settle, if you settle on a price that's below where some other people bought, I'd go give them whatever partial refund we're talking about. I just feel like that's good taste. Was that helpful? Laurel, let me know if there's follow-up there necessary. Perfect. Thank you. Now, Facebook has this really cool thing called targeting expansion, saying we will target people beyond what you're asking for if we think the performance is going to be high. You don't want this if you're running a traffic campaign like we're currently running. You do want this if you're running a conversion campaign. So I'm going to say no for now, but remember earlier when I said run the traffic campaign first and then switch to conversions? When you do switch to conversions, add targeting expansion on, because now the machine learning mechanism is going to say, you know what, this person doesn't align with all these interests, but I actually have a really strong feeling based off of everybody else who's converting that they're going to convert. In our languages, we have the ability to edit display, which I actually think is probably worth doing more often than not. On Google, I caution against this. On Facebook, I think it's helpful, especially if you're in, you know, a region or an area that's going to be multilingual, and that ends up being a problem for you. So this might be something that you leave off and then layer on later if you're like, gosh, I'm getting too many Spanish inquiries and I just don't have anybody who speaks Spanish. Laurel's asking, how often do you look at the results of the ad before you change things up? That is the best question anybody's ever asked, and it's going to be the hardest one for me to answer. So the academic answer first is you're supposed to optimize off of what's called the base 100 rate. It's the statistician's model. So it's, you have 100 data points. So if you have 100 clicks, you now know what your click-through rate is. or you know how well your landing page is performing or whatever. So you need 100 data points. The problem with that is it's too expensive to follow that rule for everything. So many times what you'll do is just look at when something feels very clear. You know, if you've had, if you're testing three ad sets against each other and you've been testing them for 2 weeks and you've spent, you know, $500 per ad set, and one ad set is producing 80% of your leads and at a, you know, a more effective cost per acquisition, et cetera, then at that point, I'd probably say, okay, I'm going to go turn off ad sets 2 and 3, take ad set number 1, clone it a couple times, and then make a new change and begin split testing that ad set. It's a really hard balance to strike, because if you make changes too early, you're stopping 3 feet from gold. But if you don't make changes fast enough, then you could just let your campaign spiral out of control and spend a bunch of money you shouldn't be spending. So the base 100, I think, is a good thing from the outset. Make sure you're getting enough traffic to at least have enough positive at-bats. People hate, for early stage campaigns, they hate seeing the money being spent without any results. But realize that, you know, if you've ever played the old Lemmings game, you're watching the Lemmings and they're just in the beginning. They're just marching towards your end result. And there's no chance that they would have gotten there anyway. So follow through with where people are in your funnel. You know, if 100 people watch your video, and of the 100 people that watched your video, 20 of them went to your landing page, that's a great click-through rate. 20% click-through rate is amazing. And now 20 people are on your landing page. And you might say, gosh, I haven't gotten any leads. Well, a 10% conversion rate from a landing page is actually pretty good. But if you've only got, you know, 20 people that are jumping on your page, then you can't expect more than 2. And at that point, I'm kind of in the, well, that's reasonable margin for error territory. And so I might want to see more people on the landing page. Is that helpful, Laurel? I'm sorry to be a fence sitter. The truth is there's no right answer. That's why running traffic ends up being kind of a full-time job. It's a lot like investing in stocks. You know, the question like, when should I buy and when should I sell? Well, that's where you make all your money. So you sort of start to figure that out yourself. You can target connections too, incidentally, or even potentially exclude. So exclude people who like your page if you don't want to target existing fans, or target people who like your page. Little saying, I did a challenge with an upsell and had a 20-cent opt-in. So I'm thinking ads is the next step. Oh, you had a 20% opt-in. That's great. Yes. Then I would definitely run ads to that challenge. That's the other thing too, is if you have like an email list that you can test things with first, that tends to be better traffic to test stuff like pricing or, you know, the efficacy of a pitch. And then you can move that over into ads. So that's awesome. Good for you. Placements. Facebook wants to know where to put your ads. They say that automatic placements are recommended. I don't think that's true at all. Here's why. Because when you look at all the places you are able to put your ads, number one, they bundle Facebook and Instagram together. And this pisses me off. This lets me know that they don't even know their own networks. Facebook and Instagram are two very different ecosystems. People go to Facebook to learn and to be informed and to argue about politics. You know, it's kind of like our new news feed. That's why they call it the feed. And then Instagram is for dreamers. It's, you know, Facebook is left brain, Instagram is right brain. Facebook, it's actually really easy to get people to opt in for offers. Instagram, it's hard to get people off of Instagram, but you can get them to engage with media. So I think it's flawed to come out here wholesale and say, hey, Facebook, take my ads and put them in front of everybody. A. B, you notice in all these implementations over here on the right-hand side, Facebook's telling you, oh, we need different types of media. So here we need, you know, 16:9 or square, and here we need different aspect ratios. And if you don't have all of this media, then why would I put my ads in, you know, all of the networks? And obviously sometimes it's not going to take place. So if you're using the dynamic creative that I mentioned, then automatic placements begins to make more sense. And actually, I think from a machine learning perspective, I think could probably work in your favor, because Facebook's really going to start to figure out what media works in what place. But you have to make sure you have a big library of stuff to give them. You know, here are the videos, and, you know, make sure you have at least one video that's under 29 seconds. Otherwise, it's not going to show up in every area. But here's videos, images in different proportions, text, and Facebook will actually auto crop some of your stuff, which is really cool. If you don't have that, and many people don't, then you can begin choosing your placements. Now, this used to be more advisable than it is at the moment. And I would anticipate my tune changing, as time moves on, because I just think the machine learning is good and good enough to kind of start to protect us from ourselves. But the real place that you want to be when you think about Facebook ads is the newsfeed. So you can come in here and decide whether or not you're going to show up, you know, just in the news feed, or if you want to show up in people's stories or in stream or inside of Facebook search or inside of Messenger, which won't be available actually based on my traffic objective. So we can come and cut off placements based off of what we think is best for our ads. The audience network is the broader version, which is in some cases less quality traffic. Messenger might be more engaged. And then, you know, maybe I say, I just want to show up on Facebook. One really important note, don't advertise on a network you don't understand. So, you know, I hear a lot of people say like, oh, well, I don't use Facebook, but they want to run ads on it. That's a dangerous place to be. You know, I'm not telling you have to respect it or even like or enjoy it, but go figure out how it works. Because, you know, Facebook's asking you, do you want to show up in somebody's stories? And you don't know what Facebook's stories are, then you don't know how to answer that. So make sure you at least understand the personality of the network. That's also going to help you with creating your creative. Because when you go to build your ads and you know how Facebook functions, then you'll be better at creating your ads for Facebook. So choose the network based off of your, what's right for you and your business and the type of media that you're creating. All the gurus are saying that videos perform the best, which, you know, I believe there's data to support, but what's really interesting is the last couple of Facebook campaigns I've run, single images have been working better than anything else. And I don't know why that is. So, you know, make sure that you have different types of media to test. A couple of notes here. This is maybe one of my favorite pro tips is I really like this only when connected to Wi-Fi, because it depends on the implementation. But if somebody's connected to Wi-Fi, it means that they're in a place that they are comfortable in, which I think generally means they're probably more open to converting. I'm less likely to be filling out a form or buying something if I'm, you know, remote. But if I'm home or at my office or in my favorite coffee shop, then I think that you'll find people are just maybe a little bit more accessible. Now, this might not, you know, if you're a restaurant and you're looking for people that are on the go, then don't use this option. But again, as you run through some of these options, it gives you the opportunity to just see what's possible. We can also convert or target by device type. So iOS users tend to be a little bit more affluent. Android users tend to be a little bit more techie. So just start to look at some of these options and realize, you know, what it might mean for you. The other thing that you should know is there's brand safety. So you have the ability to filter inventory. Facebook has some pretty risque stuff. I'm sure everybody knows. So if you're like a church or a nonprofit, you might say, hey, I don't want to be associated with any sensitive materials. I'd caution you against using this wholesale, because realize that your prospect is engaging with this content. So it's not like they think that you came up with it, but you know, if you just don't want those neuroassociative, you know, connections to be made, then you might want to limit your inventory. But otherwise feel free to keep it on standard. I wouldn't go to full inventory unless you've got like one of those fun brands that can sort of be alongside anything. You know, if you're one of the Squatty Potty types. Audience network is off because I turned it off. You can block particular, you know, whatever it is that you want, create a block list, which is kind of cool. So the, again, targeting and placements, I think are both really important. And then now we have the ability to choose how it is that we're delivering. So do we want to pay by click, page views, unique reach, impressions? So if I say page views, notice that I'm paying by impression. If I say clicks, then I can pay. Where did it go? Excuse me. Then I can pay by click. But if I'm over in page views, then the dropdown is not accessible to me. So for traffic campaigns, I like, if I'm really confident with my audience, then I'll run impression-based targeting. But if I'm not sure, or I want to kind of get a sense as to what specific actions are going to cost, then I like to pay by click. And I'll jump over to CPC, and you can even in some instances, interesting, add some cost control here. And this is relatively new too. We used to be able to define our CPCs. Maybe it's a different option. It's not. Oh, daily unique reach is also really interesting too. This means that you're reaching for the broadest number of people. And then, you know, impressions is just like, hey, give me the most number of views that you can possibly get me. So what I'd say is link clicks And then link click CPC is how we're being charged. And what's nice about this is you can see every single time that somebody clicks, you can see what it is that has cost you. And sometimes it'll be 3 cents and sometimes it'll be $3. And you'll start to see who's expensive and who's not. And you know, of the people who aren't expensive, who's converting and that type of thing. So that's it for our ad group. Now that we've set up all those settings, what we're gonna do is, this is actually kind of the easiest part. We're gonna create the ad. And so for this particular ad, I might name this based on the creative. So I'm gonna do Facebook ads for realtors, and let's say I've got, you know, images of a happy family or whatever, then, you know, I'll name the ad, choose the right Facebook page. And what's cool is you can push this across any page inside of your ad account. And then remember the dynamic ads that I mentioned to you, we're actually not going to use that. So instead, I'm just going to come in here and for the sake of ease, we'll use single image. But notice that there's a couple of options, carousel and collection. Collection is great for e-com or for, you know, if you've got a course with or a store with multiple courses or something, you could, you know, potentially use something like that. Carousel lets them page through, but I'll go single image or video. If you have time, go play with the instant experience. It's really cool. It's like kind of this full screen immersive environment that you allow people to walk through, which I really like. So, but we're not gonna go through that here. It's maybe a little bit more advanced. Here, let's add media and let's see if I've got an image that'll work. Make sure that you have the ownership right to actually use some of the images. You can see some of the media that we've used. We ran a campaign for stonemasons, and this was the image we tested. I can't tell you how many images. Notice that Facebook just did the auto crop. That is so cool that they do that. But we tested, you know, many, many images, and this was the image that performed the best for stonemasons. Now, there's a ton of reasons why that is, and some of them are maybe mildly uncomfortable, but you need to be in a position to capture people's attention. And I think this image does a really good job with that. You have this really bright color in the background. You have an attractive person who's making eye contact, which, you know, if you've read any marketing book ever, that's like one of the prerequisites to anything media based. And then she's also like, you know, surprised at something. And what's kind of cool about this is we pushed this image out and then mentioned, you know, you wouldn't believe our pricing or whatever. So have media that's going to capture attention, because realize that you're interrupting their day. They're not there looking for you. They don't want to talk to you. They don't want to hear from you necessarily. You have to change their mind about that. So the image is what gets them to stop scrolling, the image or the video. And then, you know, hopefully the video, you can get them to play. Or if we're up here in the text, this is what now I think gets them to engage. And for the text, don't go after selling your thing. So I don't want to say, you know, learn how to run Facebook ads. Instead, I would say something like, and then so on and so forth. So now we have this kind of, and you've seen this a billion times. And the reason you've seen it a billion times is because it works. You have this story-esque hook that, you know, assuming that our targeting is good enough, leads them into something that's going to be ultra applicable to them. So if I'm talking to realtors, you know, I might mention something about how the 61-day average time on market has been shattered in the last 90 days. And they're going to see that and be like, oh gosh, this person really knows my business. That's interesting. And now I can talk them into, you know, how we decrease that timeline or help them attract new buyers or whatever. So you have to play the empathy game. Going back to caring about people, you have to know them. You have to know them enough to understand their fears and what it is that they really want, and then speak to that in their ad copy. Ryan Dice says the best ad copy is the copy that articulates the shift that somebody goes through before and after whatever it is that you're giving them. Let them know how their life is going to change. And if that sounds dramatic to you, then, you know, spend some time thinking about what it is that you're doing, because no matter what, you should be changing somebody's life. You're selling them a stick of gum or, you know, spine surgery. The really cool thing about Facebook is it allows you to build variants here. So I can have, you know, multiple primary text, and then Facebook is going to deliver different text to different prospects based off of what it thinks is going to perform. And then it lets me test and see which text is performing better, which is really, really cool. So we can add options here if you want to do that. The headline is going to show up here and then the description underneath it. So I might do something a little bit more direct with the headline. You know, I'll say Facebook ad training for realtors. And that's the other thing, by the way, is if you're not sure that your targeting is great or you don't know how to get in front of people, one other thing that I've done and that I've seen work well is I'll say, hey, realtors. Oops, didn't mean to do that. But you can still make this Interesting. Hey, realtors, I couldn't believe this either, but etc. So I'm not the world's greatest copywriter, by the way. So, you know, go take a copy course from somebody else. And then the description falls under that. So I'll say, you know, free consult for first time buyers or whatever. Destination is going to be the website. Don't just send them to your homepage. Send them to a page that's applicable to the thing that it is that you're offering them. So if you're selling a course on Simplero, send them to the course page, you know, or a landing page that explains the course really well. But what's cool is we have the ability to offer a different display link. So you can actually brush this up. So I could say like mycoolcourses.com/ free something. And you actually want these URLs to match, by the way. If your display URL doesn't match, then you're going to run into some issues. Defining your call to action is really important. You have a bunch to choose from. Make sure that the one that you choose is the one that you want. Again, I have no way of proving this, but I would venture to guess that Facebook is assigning machine learning to this as well. So for me, if I'm, you know, just want leads, then maybe it's contact us. But if you're giving something away, then it can be download or get offer, et cetera. So, you know, look at what's available to you. And this is way more robust than it used to be. They used to have like five or something nuts. Connect with any partner pages if you need to do that. You can translate ads, which I think is really cool. I've never done this, full disclosure, but if you want to, you know, broaden your horizons a little bit, Facebook will do the translation for you. And then here's where we tell Facebook what it is we want to track. So remember us setting up conversion tracking earlier? We're going to jump into test for Simplero. And then if you want to do advanced tracking, then you can add URL parameters. If you know what that is, you'll know how to do it. If you don't worry about it. And then I'm going to publish. Now, when do I want to use multiple ad sets? I want to test ad sets against each other when I have different targeting. So in my ads, I'm testing media and messaging. And I want to have 5 ads or so. If you can have more, that's great. You just have to have the spend support to support it. So in my ads, I'm testing media and messaging. In my ad sets, I'm testing targeting. So I'm testing my audience. In my campaigns, if I'm running 2 campaigns against each other, I'm basically testing my entire thesis. Remember, in any test, only change 1 variable. That gets a lot harder when you have multivariants inside of your variant. But the thing to do here, the right thing to do would be, let's say that you built out your 5 ads, and I can actually show you what this looks like. So let's do 4 copies. Oops. Now that I've got my 4 copies, let's say that each of these copies, I used a different image. So I jumped in there and updated the image, but everything else is the same. Now I've got a pretty solid split test. I can see which image is going to perform the best. Then what I can do is I've got this one ad set for realtors, but I can come in here and I can duplicate this ad set. I can actually do this a bunch of times. Let's say I just do it the once. I'm going to say duplicate. And now instead of Facebook ads for realtors, this is going to be Facebook ads for chiropractors. And all my targeting needs to change, obviously. So I jump in there and adjust my audience. And then in my ads, I would adjust the images. But now I get to see, well, are realtors making more money or are chiropractors making me more money? And I would only do this wholesale cloning thing, by the way, if the campaigns, the ad sets, the chiropractor to realtor example probably isn't a great one because there's so much that you would have to change. But let's say that you were going after, let's say that you're still going after realtors, but you were testing your pricing, just to mention, I think it was Laurel's question. You know, it might be Facebook ads for realtors at this price, Facebook ads for this realtors at that price, or Facebook ads for realtors at, you know, I'm offering a free consult here, I'm offering a course there, I'm offering a workshop there, that type of thing. So you can test a lot of, you know, whatever it is that you want. I think generally speaking, ads are testing creative, ad sets are testing audience, and then campaigns is testing your overarching thesis. And you can change, you know, your offer on any one of these levels. But again, if you are going to test something, only test one thing at a time. The very last thing I'll say is once your ads are running, you're going to see them here. Notice that this is live again. I don't think I did that either. Oh, it's when I click publish, of course. And then you have the ability to view breakdowns. So you can view information. You can view performance. Generate reports. The problem is this is going to get really overwhelming. So the thing that you really want to just pay attention to is your cost per result, your cost per whatever it is you told Facebook that you want. And notice that when we're running a traffic campaign, it's actually not going to give you that right out of the gate. So you want to go in and customize your columns so you can actually see what the conversion is. So I'd go customize columns, standard events, and then I'd go find the event, and I have too many here. And I think I called it test, but I'd go find the event that I want to test against and watch how many of those events I'm getting inside of this campaign. And once I have my 50, and if I like the number, then move it over to a conversion campaign. Yeah, and that's all I got. And we're 10 minutes past the hour, which I think is okay, right? We're supposed to be here for 90.
Definitely okay.
What I had scheduled. Any? How did I do there? Any feedback for me? Any questions, comments, concerns, confessions? Happy to do a hot seat if somebody wants to like volunteer themselves. I'll make you a panelist and we can just chat. Or I can give you 20 minutes of your life back and we can jump ship. I don't want to belabor the call any more than I have already. While you all are thinking about questions, I'd love your feedback for me. I have an anonymous survey, solate.com/better. And I just dropped that into chat. And if you have feedback, when you fill out the survey, I won't know who you are. And you can tell me one thing that I did well, three things that I can improve upon. And then any topics that you want to hear about in the future, I'd love to know that from you too. But yeah, other than that, I think we're good to go. I appreciate y'all showing up. And the recording will be made available to you, I don't know when. So we'll
tomorrow.
Tomorrow. Wow, that's fast. Good for y'all. Cool. Clear to sign off?
Yeah, I think we're all set. Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you. I appreciate your help.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.